Okay, Peter, when you were a kid growing up in the 1990s, what was the context of being the GOAT, especially as it come as in reference to sports?
Goat was the greatest of all time, wasn't it?
Not when we were kids.
Oh, hold on.
Remember?
Oh, yes. It was like a blunder. It was a bad thing. I'm glad you reminded me of that.
Yeah, if you screwed up, you were the goat of the
That's
game. Like,
fine. That's
I think it came from scapegoat.
yes.
I
That's a good
remember
point. Yeah.
when I was a kid, the Chiefs had a really we had a really bad playoff loss to the Indianapolis Colts, and our kicker missed like I think it was four or five, like four field goals, and we would have won had he made any one of those, but he was the goat for that game. For a long time, the Chiefs fan base wouldn't even say his name. He was a kicker who shall not be named.
Wasn't there like, didn't they used to bring goats to the stadium, or there were pictures of goats? It was, yeah. And now I'm thinking about it. Goats were like.
For a long time, if you were the goat, it was a bad thing.
It was. You're not
But now,
wrong.
what is it?
It's the greatest of all time.
Greatest of all time, and Tom Brady and Michael Jordan are considered the goats, and everybody calls it that. Everybody has arguments about who is it, LeBron or Michael Jordan, whatever, but it's who's the GOAT. So a shift has happened over the last, I want to say 10, maybe 15 years.
Very observant. You're correct. Yes.
Okay. Just keep that in mind.
Okay. I'm with you. Okay.
I got into The Godfather again. I rewatched the first and second one. We watched that show, The Offer, which is about the making of The Godfather. Right. So I was just like, oh, that's neat. The Offer was a behind the scenes look at it. And it made me want to revisit the movies. And so I had to go check it out from the library because somebody has my, I can't find my copy. But
I mean, I don't know why you would. I mean, a good friend of yours, probably, like a
I probably loaned it out to somebody who'd
someone who
never
talks
seen.
to you every week about life and books you read. I mean, I don't think you need. I mean, how long has he had it? Maybe.
2 years.
Okay. I mean,
It's fine. It's okay. It's okay.
what's
I would.
property? What's the property value of that? Probably not a lot.
$100, $3.99.
Okay. I mean, let's.
Next bet you lose, I'm gonna make you watch The Godfather with me.
Good
Anyway.
question. I don't know where it is.
Anyway, so I watched the podcast, the Rewatchables over at The
Yes.
Ring, Bill Simmons, colleague of ours.
Colleague of
We're both
ours.
podcasters. Anyway, they did a Godfather 2 Rewatchables, and I found it interesting and informative.
Delightful.
Sometimes, yeah. We'll at him on Twitter. So yeah, let's be nice. Yeah, it was delightful. I'm gonna be nice to him. He made a point. So you don't know because you haven't seen either of them, but listeners, because everybody's
Yeah, I don't know what's happening right
in The
now.
Godfather 2, there's a part where
Heard the name.
Fredo is the mess up
Okay.
young brother or older brother, but he's kind of he's the guy, the screw up, the black sheep,
I got you.
the
I got
goat family.
you. Okay.
And so, but he's teaching, he's talking to Michael Corleone's kids when he fishes. He says he likes to say a Hail Mary and cast his line, right?
Okay.
It's just,
Weird way
whatever.
of fishing, but I
Well, you it's like you're praying and then throwing it out there and hoping you catch something, right? Is that what?
is this a metaphor or is this
It's
real?
no, it's just a scene in the movie.
Okay. Sorry, I won't interrupt anymore.
It's a touching scene before a very famous other scene happens.
Don't
It's
spoil it. How
it's
dare
I
you?
don't want to spoil it for you,
How
but
dare
something
you?
happens to Fredo right after that scene in a fishing boat. Anyway, Bill Simmons made a point, and I think it kind of blew my mind. I was like, oh, that might be true. That he says that in The Godfather 2 might have been the first time Hail Mary being connected with hoping for a long shot. Because you'll know Hail Mary has always been a prayer, but what is Hail Mary in sports now? It's like a last play, you heave
Desperation, yeah.
desperation play.
Okay.
But the prayer doesn't necessarily imply desperation, that's just a prayer. So Bill Simmons was saying, I think The Godfather 2 might be why we connect Hail Mary with kind of praying and then hoping something good happens.
Okay.
That was another shift, the Hail Mary to kind of sports talk was in The Godfather 2. And I don't know how true it is. I'm not going to go back and watch a bunch of 50s and 60s movies to try to find something before that. I was just like, oh, that's an interesting point. The Hail Mary shifted in context from a prayer to what we know it now.
Yeah.
In the book, Infinite Jest, by David Foster Wallace, right?
There's a roller coaster of an intro.
There's a character. You got to stay with me, man. There's levels.
Okay. All right.
There's a character.
Water break. Pause the episode right now. He's not coming. Okay. Continue.
Really character named Joelle Van Dyne. And she is known as the prettiest girl of all time. And in the book, it is abbreviated to P-GOAT, P-G-O-A-T, all caps, periods in between.
Mm-hmm. With all of you.
P-GOAT, prettiest girl of all time.
Doesn't roll off the tongue as it is easy.
But you're reading it, okay. So that's just what it stands for. Are you following me?
I'm still here, yeah.
I am positing that the shift from GOAT to being a scapegoat loser to greatest of all time came from Infinite Jest and David Foster Wallace using the acronym P-GOAT for prettiest girl of all time in Infinite Jest. Eat your heart out, Bill Simmons.
That would make any sense. I'm trying. Because it's not even the same. It's not the same thing. He said he came up with prettiest girl of all time was a thing. It's not, though. You know, GOAT.
What are you talking about? No.
GOAT is greatest of all time. It made like the.
It's the same. So using of all time, G O A T, greatest of all time.
Are you saying David Foster Wallace invented acronyms?
No, I'm saying he's responsible for the shift from GOAT.
No.
I'm saying from GOAT being a scapegoat to standing for greatest of all time came from Infinite Jest and him using it that way in Infinite Jest.
If it was
GOAT, it's GOAT.
How?
G of all time, the OAT. That's where the shift happened. In the same way Hail Mary was from The Godfather 2, I noticed the similar.
What year did the book come out?
1996.
Mm.
But as cultural cachet, it was a hit then, but it's kind of been a popular thing amongst pretentious literary bro types since then. And I'm saying the cultural ferment, yes. I'm gonna go on record, that is my theory.
Also
responsible for the shift.
I Googled it, okay.
Okay.
And there seems to be a possible different answer. Now, for the purpose of the podcast, I think we should go with yours.
Sure. What's the different answer?
The other answer would be 2000, so around your time frame. Likely thanks to LL Cool J, who released a compilation, I believe, or maybe just an album called... It was released G, period O, period A, period T. And then in parentheses, greatest of all time. He's very popular. And that's when they now, a little bit more research as I use the Google machine. He says he credited Muhammad Ali for its origin in a 2016 interview with Rolling Stone. I don't think Muhammad Ali did the interview. I think LL Cool J did the interview.
In 2016?
That he says he credited Muhammad Ali.
Muhammad Ali is generally considered to be the greatest boxer of all time.
But he often said himself he was the greatest of all time.
But did he use the acronym, right? That's what I'm saying. Did he use the acronym? Because the greatest of all time... You can call yourself that, but it's using the acronym GOAT.
I gotcha.
Way, right? It's interesting because 2000, the LL Cool J album came out after Infinite Jest. So it's possible Cool J was influenced by David Foster Wallace too.
So let's just, okay. Hey, we're in year three of the podcast. We're in 2023, big new year. And I think this is going to be, this year is going to be the year of LL Cool J versus David Foster Wallace.
Setting him up.
Whose side are you on?
Yeah. Hey, you know what's interesting? LL Cool J is itself an acronym. Do you know what LL Cool J stands for?
Ladies Love Cool James.
Yeah.
And on that note, welcome to There Will Be Books, a podcast about books and goats. I'm Peter, joined as always by Matt. Matt, we can still riff on this, but
one more tidbit while I'm on the office. That's my theory. Okay. I'm proud of it. I'm gonna roll with it.
I ask you a couple just basic questions?
Yeah, go ahead.
What time did you come up with this theory? Early morning, late night?
Last year, actually. The Super Bowl, the last Super Bowl Tom Brady was in.
You've been keeping this from me.
Yeah, I started mulling, like, when did the GOAT thing?
Well, 2 years?
Yeah. Well, David Foster Wallace has been coming up more and more on our show. And I thought this would be a good time to drop. Well, and then the Godfather thing, watching the rewatchables Godfather. And that Hail Mary thing kind of solidified. It's like, no, I think the cultural shift happened then. And it filtered up to LL Cool J.
No.
Mm. So for LL Cool J to name his album that, it would have to seep in. He or somebody, he would have had to hear about
he heard it from.
He says Muhammad Ali, but yeah, he got the idea to call it the greatest of all time. Did he get the idea for the acronym from Muhammad Ali? I think the acronym came from Infinite Jest.
Are you sure?
Anyway,
okay.
Speaking of Infinite Jest, do you know who John Krasinski is?
I do. He's
the guy who played Jim on The Office.
Yeah.
You know, he's a big David Foster Wallace fan.
I thought you were going to say he was a big LL Cool J fan.
Probably. But he directed a movie based on a David Foster Wallace novel called Brief Interviews with Hideous Men.
Sorry, I was looking at the track listing of LL Cool J's album.
Anyway,
I'm back with you.
So he directed a movie called Brief Interviews with Hideous Men based on a David Foster Wallace novel.
That sounds all true.
Short story collection. I remember reading an interview and he said he got the rights from David Foster Wallace and his agent, who were hesitant to sell the rights for a movie because it seems like a pretty unfilmable book. But he said something along the lines of, I don't think anybody in contemporary American writers captures the American spirit and, you know, the state of the world as much as David Foster Wallace. So anyway, big fan of Wallace. Do you watch The American Office?
I do.
In the show, there's Michael Scott's boss is Jan Levinson Gould, right?
Oh boy.
Is this whole
episode's going to be your theories about?
Just let me.
Okay.
Jan, you remember the character Jan?
Yes.
Michael has all sorts of shenanigans with Jan. Jan has a boss, the corporate guy. Mm-hmm. Do you know what? You remember his name?
David Wallace. Huh.
That's all I'm saying.
I
think it's a little homage, right? Is that's too much of a? It's just an homage. It's not a conspiracy or anything.
I kind of think I don't know.
But there is a character.
We might need to get you some help or something because this
is that not true.
But why wouldn't his name be David Foster Wallace?
It's just a little homage.
That's an homage, okay. Right? But I think you're hinting that it's more than an homage, right?
I think Krasinski or maybe some of the writers were also fans and they said, hey, let's call this character. Mm. Let's name his character after.
I can't dispute that.
Are you saying it's a coincidence? Because it's either a coincidence or it's a little homage.
I feel like I'm in like a scene of The Wire and I have all the cops and I'm trying to get your brain. I'm trying to do one of those pinboard things the cops do with the string attaching to all of it. So I'm trying
there's a famous, you're less online than me, but there's a famous meme and it's Charlie from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, something like that. But this is not a conspiracy. Okay,
so we started from We got Godfather. We got the rewatchables. Godfather 2, sorry. We got David Foster Wallace. We have GOAT. We have LL Cool J.
Muhammad Ali.
Muhammad Ali. John Krasinski. The Office. The Office's his boss's boss.
Jan Levinson Gould's boss, David Wallace.
Hmm. Man.
Yeah. The Freemasons.
That's good, I guess.
Hey, so I'm just saying the star of the show is a big fan of a popular contemporary writer and a character, a supporting kind of relatively minor character in the same show, shares a name with the writer. All I'm saying is I wonder if that's a homage. That's all I'm saying, right? Neat little tidbit. I will ask Krasinski. We get him on the show because he's promoting. He's Jack Ryan now.
JK, see what's up.
Harrison Ford. Harrison Ford, arguably the GOAT of movie stars.
He's not the GOAT of movie stars. Stop.
Harrison Ford?
No.
Are you kidding me? Who is?
He's maybe top 20.
He's top 10.
Stop.
Especially our lifetime. Are you? I mean, I won't argue like Paul Newman and Cary Grant and those people.
Who?
I'm talking still alive. Peter, oh man. See, my face is red. Who's the GOAT of movie stars?
Right now?
Still alive.
Still alive? Probably Hemsworth, right?
I'm going to take a step back and realize I'm being trolled. I don't want to. I'm just okay. I'm not gonna go along. You just thought it was so ridiculous to call Harrison Ford that.
I mean, he's 80. He's 80.
In our lifetime,
Harrison in our lifetime, Ford is
probably the greatest or one of the greatest.
He's not the greatest.
Him and Denzel are the goats of.
Denzel's so much better than Harrison Ford.
They're at the same level.
I thought you were gonna say that. Okay. What the rails?
This contempt for Harrison Ford is kind of offending me.
You know, I think I have a little leeway because last year in our last episode, I agreed to read 4 essays for you from David Foster Wallace.
You lost a bet, so you have to. I'm excited to get going on it, but
I don't think it's the sheriff's not gonna come to my door not reading these stories, essays.
Sure.
I almost bought another book, short story collection. Didn't it? You gave it to me because I've gotten you so excited that I'm joining the universe of David.
This stuff is all percolating.
I feel like you're like indoctrinating me in some like whole Reddit stuff about like, hey, do you know that the office's boss's boss guy is David Wallace? Is this like the first step in me getting a tattoo?
That's true. That's not up for debate that the character is named that.
It's not. Okay.
It's not. The character is named David Wallace. You draw your meaning, draw whatever you want from that. You know, did the Freemasons force John Krasinski to name the character David Wallace? I'm not saying. I'm just asking questions. Who's a better movie star than Harrison Ford?
Brad Pitt. That was easy. That was not very hard. Chris Pratt. This might become a solo pod soon. If I don't.
It's not that you can't have.
Star Wars is the great movie.
You haven't seen Star Wars. Maybe that's the problem. Have you seen Indiana Jones?
I've seen some of them. Yeah.
Have you seen Clear and Present Danger?
I have. I think it's a fantastic movie.
Who starred in Clear and Present Danger?
Well, I mean, you're saying the greatest of all time. I'm starting to get upset now.
Do you know in the shootout scene in Columbia, that famous in Clear and Present Danger?
Yeah.
Where they're going down the streets, you know, the guy.
Those are real bullets.
No, one of the guys up there with the rocket launcher in Columbia in a balaclava. You know what the actor's name is?
Tom Clancy.
David Wallace.
Are you serious?
No, I just made that up.
We have so many books to talk about too. That's the thing.
True. I'm a little offended by the Harrison Ford thing, but I'm pretty sure.
No, but the listener knows we have.
We can move on from the David Foster Wallace stuff. I just want the public to keep my theory in mind. And so if you're a fan of The Office, just let me know. And if you're in that world or whatever, let me know what you think of that.
I have an analogy here. It might be wrong. It's not really relevant. Maybe last year it was. Harrison Ford and David Foster Wallace is like that ship in the Suez Canal that got stuck like sideways. And all of our books are just backing up. Just backing up.
Oh,
every week from now on, we're going to have a debate about the greatest of all time. Something.
I don't think that's what's backing us up. And you act like we have a time limit on these things.
We don't.
There's no time limit here.
We're not in school.
Fine.
We're not
in school. We could go 2 hours. We could go 3 hours. Goat podcaster Joe Rogan sometimes goes for three and a half.
Yeah.
A long episode for us is like $1.20. So we're good. We're okay. Good. Oh, and also I should say, I kind of hate saying goat. I kind of hate the acronym.
Okay.
You know, I don't like it. I'll use it to make my point clear. But
so this 20-minute conversation, we end it with, you don't like the term goat?
I also hate the term, yeah.
Okay.
Surprise twist.
Surprise twist. I like it. Do you want to talk about books tonight? No?
Sure. We go through Harrison Ford's filmography.
I want to...
It was an Apocalypse Now.
Somewhat clear. I do like Harrison Ford in some roles.
You just seem...
I just don't consider him the greatest of all time.
Movie star. I didn't even say actor. Like, the greatest movie star.
Tom Cruise is a bigger movie star than him.
I prefer Harrison Ford. Tom Cruise, you have
preferences.
I like Harrison Ford and Denzel Washington. I'll put as the top two living ones. Tom Cruise is you know, you can't argue that he's not a top five, but he's a weirdo.
Yeah. Oh boy. Do you want to look back at our 2022 books that we read, Matt?
Yeah, and look forward to 2023. This is the New Year's episode.
Initial goal of this episode was that was our.
It's fine. I told you the opener was going to be long.
That's great.
We're not derailed.
Okay.
It's not the book Oscars though.
It is not that. That's February.
Book Oscars
or not
coming up. That's going to be fun. That's going to be even better than this episode.
Who's the Harrison Ford of the books we read?
We'll get to it on the book Oscars. That'll be a category.
Where do we begin from last year? Because I think I finished some of the books. Correct me if I'm wrong. Is Foundation our beginning book of 2022?
Yeah. Okay. It starts with Foundation.
We go Red and the Black. We have Paper Lion, which was a
Patreon
episode.
Paper Lion and Eight Men Out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We have Dorothy Dunnett, The Game of Kings. We have David Mitchell, Black Swan Green. Ken Kesey, Sometimes a Great Notion, was kind of a seasonal read for us. We have Masters of Atlantis. We have Xenophon and the Persian Expedition. We have P.G. Woodhouse with Summer Lightning, which the more I think back on that book, it's very, very good. Excellent. Yeah. Going through our list here. Yeah. We also have The Fifth Business by Robertson Davies. An excellent book, beginning of a trilogy that I think we both are wanting to finish, eager to finish.
We'll finish at some point, yeah.
We had The Silent Patient, which was a thriller over on our Patreon. We had Loris, a strange and beguiling novel that we read. Let's see here. I read Neverwhere by Neil Gaiman, right? And you had already read it.
I reread it.
Black Leopard, Red Wolf by Marlon James, another seasonal book.
The most difficult one, maybe?
Probably the most difficult book, okay. Challenging to read. We had another novel, Flash for Freedom. Another good entry into the chronicles of our hero there. We had Cult Classic by Sloane Crosley. And let's see here. Eight Men Out. I'd finished Drive Your Plow Over the Bones of the Dead. I don't know if you add that in there.
And I think then, we have to record the episode.
Haven't recorded. And then also probably the last thing was Brad Thor's The Lions of Lucerne.
We had Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Midsummer Night's Dream.
True.
And The New Manifesto.
New Manifesto. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Sam Ernst.
We recorded his episode in March or April, so it's part
that
of
counts. It. That definitely counts.
Yeah. And I read Beautiful World, Where Are You? By Sally Rooney.
Well, yeah.
So that's in the mix.
So those are the titles that we got through this year.
We had a pretty good year.
Yeah, going through it. Does any favorites stand out for you? Any authors? I have this as part of my 2023 goals, but any kind of related to this? Anything, any new authors stand out, I guess, is what I'm kind of asking. Somebody you hadn't read before or kind of, I think I have a couple, actually.
Robertson Davies.
I was going to say that.
I'd heard of him, but I've never read him. And Fifth Business was very good. Very good.
The pride, like,
I know I should have heard of this guy before.
Dorothy Dunnett.
Dorothy Dunnett too. Yeah. Those two are the only new ones. It was fun to revisit. Sometimes A Great Notion held up.
Did very good. That was very good. Yeah.
I
think from a pure writing, like the style and the, sometimes I like a book just for its, I like the story in that book a lot, but just his way with words and imagery and everything. It's just like, for me, that was my favorite writer performance, I guess. That's kind of book, that's almost like book Oscars, but like just as a writer.
Mm-hmm.
Ken Kesey in that book is just fantastic.
Yeah. Did you get Loris too? They had Loris on there.
I had Loris, yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
That was.
It's different.
Different. And it, to be honest, not. It kind of disappointed me, I guess. But
yeah.
I enjoyed the run of Masters of Atlantis through Summer Lightning to Fifth Business. Also, mm-hmm. The Xenophon, we've done some kind of classic literature, classic literature, and that was my least favorite of the stuff we've done. Would you?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I enjoyed it.
It's kind of very dry and technical in a lot of ways. When I was thinking back on it, I don't know. What's your feelings on that?
I enjoyed it.
Okay.
That was good.
There you go.
It's a fun adventure. I guess the style is different, but it's been translated and gone through 2,000 years of, you know, been bouncing around. So, yeah, I could see how it's kind of dry. It didn't read as clear and smooth as some as the others, but I'm glad we read it. And one of the things I had for looking forward was I think we should do more history.
I agree. Yeah. I would even go so far as I would like that for us to add some biography.
Yeah.
Not just solely history.
I don't think we've done
because I read a lot of history outside of the podcast that I kind of like bring in occasionally. And mm-hmm. if I'm looking at my entire year, I would say my favorite books, I would say 50% of them are history books I read this year. So I think as you and I, we bring some history, maybe as seasonal reads, maybe as well, maybe create a category for them.
I would agree. That'd be fun. It'd be good to do.
Eight Men Out was really good. That mm-hmm. was really, really
yeah, that counts.
Good. That's history.
Baseball. History / sports.
That's, that was, I would say that's top, maybe top five books I've read that last year.
Mm-hmm.
What was your favorite book, Matt?
Oh.
Does that ruin the book Oscars or?
Well, yeah, some of this stuff we should say for the book Oscars. I'll say, well, and then I was going to start categorizing this to be book Oscar stuff. A lot of this stuff I revisited, but Masters of Atlantis and Summer Lightning I think were funny, mm-hmm. hilarious. I enjoyed Cult Classic. I like Sam's book a lot as far as like newcomers, first authors, right. authors who sent us their books.
There you go.
Midsummer Night's Dream was good. As far as plays, first play we did.
First play.
I enjoyed, so I know maybe you didn't like them. I know you didn't like them as much, but The Red and the Black and Midsummer Night's Dream, I enjoyed the extra like research I read, the Girardian sort of take I uncovered.
I would say
that was fun. And that's useful because I see that sort of thing, the mimetic desire and reading that into novels. I see it a lot more now because we read those two books. So that was cool.
Red and the Black is interesting. It was dense and there were parts of it I didn't enjoy, but I also felt at the same time I was reading it, I wasn't giving it a fair shot in a way, or I wasn't totally engaged with the book, or I wasn't at the same level at the book. I feel like I was missing stuff and it was just kind of my fault in a weird way. Now, stylistically, I can't really change that. It is what it is. But I think if I was ever to revisit that book, I think I would probably enjoy it more. But not for sure.
Yeah.
And when I think of difficult book, like Black Leopard, Red Wolf, I want to say the same thing about that. But that was just, I don't know. That was I'm glad I read it. I might continue and finish the trilogy, or how many books there are in the as planned, but I don't know. That was another book where I misread what it was going to be like, but
yeah, they were kind of difficult. Yeah. And different than you expect, but back to Red and the Black, I find myself thinking about that book every now and again. Mm-hmm. And I think half of it was, I went in expecting a kind of it kind of is a novel of ambition.
Yeah.
A young man makes his way through the world, but it's our protagonist kind of screws up and he gets in his own way and it winds up not being, it's a novel of thwarted ambition and his desire. I wasn't expecting that and it's different, but I find myself thinking about it a lot, especially reading stuff like Game of Kings by Dorothy Dunnett.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you read Dumas or whatever, those kind of fun novels where the hero does actually succeed. And you compare it to Red and the Black, and it's like, oh, it's kind of, it's like if D'Artagnan had failed. You know, it's one of those adventure novels where instead of succeeding, the protagonist gets in his own way, his ego screws him up, and it's like a tragic failure. And so, yeah, reading it is like, oh, this isn't what I expected. Sometimes it was hard, but thinking about it afterwards, and especially having, it's been almost a year, it's been kind of marinating, I appreciate it a lot more now.
I had something in my head as I was reading it, the Blithedale romance by Nathaniel Hawthorne.
Yeah, yeah.
I got the sense that, this is just a theory that popped in my head, that if you pay attention to like really in depth, like almost like if you were in college, like the layering is sort of like these older works we're reading, not all of them, but for like Blithedale romance, for example, or maybe like Red and the Black, it just seems much more dense and there's much more things you can like strings you can pull out of rather than some of the newer stuff we've read. And I'm not making judgment. It's just like, sometimes I like having that challenge of pulling different threads, or like there's a layering to like, even like a scene can be very carefully constructed, while sometimes and like I said, this isn't like a, you know, fast and easy rule, like newer stuff is basic and simple and the older stuff has more complexity than it seems. Maybe it's a little drier, but do you follow me on that? Where it's, I can almost look at the scenes in some of these books. And now I can even consider like Dorothy Dunnett has this. It was very a craftsman's work, like getting different things out of the scene rather than just moving the plot along. So characters are developed and sort of motivations are explored and all these different things that if you were in like a college level course, you would be looking at in a work. I think, I was just thinking about that this afternoon, but
yeah.
As we look back on this 2022 year, I think if you look at some of the newer works, they don't, I would say Robertson Davies actually has that in height, like,
well, there's layers, there's meaning. There's something that the author's going for this maybe unspoken or that takes a little work to get to. And we touch on this every now and again, you know, the difference between literature, serious literature, and like genre stuff that doesn't get taken as seriously. And one of the things I think we agree, but I kind of harp on it, is a lot of contemporary literary fiction, I think, kind of misses the point. They don't have something kind of dense, or they don't, like Hawthorne's doing, or like Robertson Davies, or even Dorothy Dunnett did, where they have some meaning that you have to unearth. I think they kind of mimic each other and just want to look like a serious book, and so they make it boring. They think, oh, I can't have anything fun happen because then I wouldn't be seriously. Yeah. But the seriousness and what makes something quote unquote literature is actually having something deep and meaningful to say, which isn't easy.
No, it isn't. And if you,
that's a good distinction that you were talking about.
But it's not something, it's interesting. Like you read, I enjoyed the Brad Thor, I enjoyed the Plimpton book about, you know, trying to find, but there is something to the challenge of trying to almost get on the author when an author is like really like, here's, and sometimes you can disagree with how they do it or it's not effective or there's ways that you can critique it. But I was just thinking about that this afternoon reading Hawthorne, who I think, I'm not like a huge fan of his style, but I was paying attention. I was like, actually he's doing a lot in sort of a short time frame with character motivations and just like how it plays out. Like, I don't know how to exactly phrase it because you and I are not the Harvard graduate English.
Not the brightest bulbs in the bush.
But I remember thinking about that, about Dorothy Dunn being surprised. But that's a genre. I would say that's a genre.
That's kind of a genre adventure story, but
historical fiction. But as far as a writer, or, you know, at the top of her craft, you can definitely see it in that work. Versus some of the other works where I might have liked them or I might have thought they were okay, but didn't really engage I would say Loras was a little bit like that for me. Other works, I don't think Cult Classic, that was its aim. Its aim was to be a sort of contemporary humor commentary. So I think that's a little unfair to throw that judgment on that book.
She made some good points, but she was entertaining at the same time. I thought that book was a delightful. Yeah. Ken Kesey, I think, was going for some deep stuff. He was in
deep
waters, but he was maybe his writing style was just more engaging to us. But that book kind of went along smoothly.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Good writer. Masters of Atlantis. That book was really fun to read. It's funny on nearly every page, but I would consider it kind of a serious literature at the same time. I think Portis.
I think I agree. There's a contemporary.
Is a great American. And
we kind of got into that in the episode about some of the. Yeah, he's kind of juggling a couple things there. The humor to, he never forgets like the humor and the absurdity to it all, but there is a. Yeah.
Well, and you
something can be, if you take a step back, you're looking at these characters in a different light. If you're changing like a literary theory critique on it.
And here's something, P.G. Wodehouse. He is a great writer, but he really didn't deal with anything serious. He didn't even pretend to, but he really, plot wise, he structures everything. He structures things as well as any other novelist, like any of the serious Dickens, Henry James or whatever, but it just had silly people with silly stakes, but they're just, it's so well written, it's so consistently funny, and there really are, the plots are ingenious, like, and they all make sense. He really plotted them out, And he's a great writer, but it's not, you know, it's just funny.
It shows that certain genres, they have, you know, you can, some people think of them different ways, like P.G. Woodhouse, all his work, but what he's doing still requires a great amount of talent to pull it off, right? Yeah. To pull it off well, like great. Like he's the great author in his area, right?
He's the GOAT.
He's the GOAT. That doesn't diminish like the talent that requires that versus easy, right? There's different skill sets, but equally challenging.
But it's a serious, you know, Ken Keyes is a serious work. But a lot of, like, P.G. Woodhouse is somebody a lot of authors admire. Like, even serious authors, they're like, oh, I read Woodhouse to relax or whatever. So, I don't know, maybe it's just consistently good at something.
Is there anything do you think we were lacking as far as kinds of books we were reading last year, or we kind of did?
Well,
I'm fairly happy with our selection.
You know what? So, because before I started compiling the list, because we're kind of halfway, we're not too far behind, but there's some stuff that we need to catch up on.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of in the back of my mind. But when I sat down and made this list, it's like, you know what? This is actually a really good list.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we put a lot on our plate, but what we actually finished here, that is a solid. I'll put it up against the Aaron Rodgers book club from Pat McAfee or the Lex Friedman list I sent you. Like, this is a good solid, good solid mix. If you were somebody who wants to read more or looking to get into reading, mm-hmm. I think this would be a good mixture. We could send you this year's list and say, do this. You'll be entertained. You'll learn a little something.
There's a good variety too, as far as styles too, and it's not a who's who book. We kind of went off in some different directions and genres, and
I don't think we were trying to impress anybody.
No, you know, but it's enjoyable to read different. Like if we were just reading same classics for 6 months, I think we both would have gotten kind of bored or maybe burnt out by the sixth book or something, maybe.
I'm glad we had some classics in there. We had a mix of genre. Like, I liked Foundation. It was a fun
surprise book for me. I would say that was very surprising how much I liked that book.
Yeah.
Because I don't think I was going in being like, oh, I'm going to love Foundation. I was curious. I was interested to read it, but it was not. My reaction was not what I was expecting, so.
Yeah.
Any other thoughts on 2022 books?
Well, no, we'll save it for the book. The book Oscar is going to be fun.
Yeah, because we got
last year it was really fun. You know, you have best character, best writer, best villain, best doomed protagonist.
Do we have setting or something? Best.
Yeah, and we can have new categories. We can look at the list of books and create a new category and everything. But this would be good.
I like it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Do you want to jump to 2023, our new year? Reading.
Yeah.
We've done this before, and we accomplished very little.
So, I'm not going to get.
But I think the exercise is, it's a fun thing to think about. It's a fun.
Yeah.
Even if you don't accomplish your goals, right? It's always fun to make the goals.
Do you have like some books and stuff?
I had some overall themes with some kind of examples.
Okay. I have some vague kind of goals, nothing too specific, but stuff I want to get into. We can do that.
Let me, I got a couple here off the top of my list. Okay. I have this idea of 100 pages a day and I never reach it. I take breaks. That's a lot of. The schedule and a life and a job, that's not realistic. But in my head, I'm like, if I can get to 100 pages a day, that's not
realistic. You could do it. If you quit your job, you could do it.
Yes. I have one that says, read more of your favorites. So sometimes we get like, oh, that's a favorite author of mine. And I kind of like forget about them and I don't read more of their work.
Yeah.
I kind of want to try to fix that in a way. Like if I get an author I really like, try to pick up another book of theirs, barely like
and finish. Yeah.
Or if you're like, I, you know, like Dumas, I love Count of Monte Cristo. I haven't picked up another Dumas book in 2 years. I want to get that, you know, try to get that fixed.
I like that.
So yeah. that's a goal for 2023. I have reread something. I don't really do that often. And I have one tied to that a little bit. It says revisit a favorite author and kind of see if that's kind of rereading a favorite author, I guess. But
we did that with Black Swan Green.
We did that with, yeah, David Mitchell, which I think we could maybe try again this year with maybe another work of his.
Revisit Ghostwritten or something. Yeah.
Cloud Atlas.
Yeah.
I think that's a fun thing to kind of, because some of these authors that I would consider my favorite authors, maybe have my opinion of their work has changed. Right.
Yeah. Revisit somebody that you liked back in the day. But I'm about to do that with David Foster Wallace, actually. Sure. I haven't read him since college.
So. Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. That'll be fun. Yeah. But I think that's a fun.
And you could do that. And you mentioned, you said Michael Ondaatje, right?
I'm still a big fan of his, but I haven't read his work in a couple of years. But yeah, that was just a person. I was gonna say Hemingway. Like I really liked Hemingway as a young man. I guess, I don't know. That's a cliche, but it's true. I don't know. But
man, a lot of cliches are cliches because they're true.
They're true.
That's an admirable goal.
I have genre jumping as my tagline. Just kind of read maybe more biography, thriller. Don't always have to read the literary fiction, right? I have one I thought was interesting. Do a deep dive on an unread author. And the one I was thinking of is Philip Kerr, who did a Bernie Gunther kind of World War II, Europe, Germany.
Are those spy novels?
I believe they're kind of spy novels, yes.
Find out if Bernie Gunther is a spy, and it might count because we're doing spy novels here on the Patreon soon.
I think, I don't want to say for sure, but let me hold on.
Good nominee.
I know the series is like fairly long.
I've heard of them, yeah, but I haven't read them either. So when you say unread, you mean unread to you?
Unread to me. So that, okay. Yeah. There's 12 of these novels, and they are historical novels featuring a Berlin detective. That's not really.
Not quite.
It won't work. But it's still a goal. I would like, you know, like, doesn't have to be that work, but how are my goals so far, Matt? Are they?
I'm like, this is perfect. This is what I had in mind. We're not just going to, here's a list of 20 specific books that we're not going to read.
Give an author a second chance. So I had this one book. I read this probably 5 years ago, maybe a little bit longer. So this was on another list. I'm a huge fan of the list. The book is The Last Samurai by this author, Helen DeWitt. Okay. And I saw all these people say it was this great modern classic. I've occasionally seen people mention it. I don't think you've heard of it, but I read the book, The Last Samurai, and I hated it. Like, really, I did not like it. Now, I would like to give her another chance. She only doesn't have that many works. I think there might be one or two other books. There's a short story collection. Helen DeWitt, I want to give you a second chance. I don't know if I want to read The Last Samurai again, but I guess that would also fit into this resolution, right? So for you, is there an author that you would want to give a second chance to? Someone who may have grown up in similar area that you did, or?
Oh, okay. I see what you're driving at.
Ben Lerner. We go back to Ben Lerner. See,
I could be talked into reading at the Choo Choo Station. Well, his first one. You could talk. I could do that because I am curious. Because the peak of school was terrible, but maybe his early stuff. At the Achitoa, leaving the Achitoa Station.
And there's one with a number 1014.
I'm also sorry. I'm not interested in his poetry, but I could do that. I could do leaving
Second chance is okay, Matt.
You know what came to mind when you started talking about that? Hemingway, actually.
Okay.
Because I kind of, for whatever reason, got into my head, I kind of looked down on Hemingway. But that might have been a pretentious kind of pose on my part, because I honestly have only read some of The Sun Also Rises and some other random stuff. So that he might be somebody for me to revisit and maybe give a second chance to.
Because I think you and I suffer from the issue of we get in our head that we won't like an author, we shouldn't like an author as much, and we're like, yeah, I can't. But who cares? Like,
that's honestly
like the author you want to like.
Yeah. And maybe some of it's the show, some of it's just getting older. It's like, you know what? Let's just read what you like. And if you like it, don't worry about seeming serious.
Agreed.
So, yeah. Okay. Lerner and Hemingway, for me, I would be willing to give second chances.
Life and Fate, we're going to finish it this year. Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
Hey, let me cut in with one of my kind of goals. It's finishing stuff, getting stuff wrapped up.
Gotcha.
Because I have stuff I want to start. I'm in the mood. I read that, I talked about last time, that Young and Frodo book.
Yes.
Yeah, it put me in the mood to do Lord of the Rings. And I think you're willing.
So
but I had to stop myself. Like, we'll do it, but we have to do Life and Fate. We have to do.
I think one of our goals should be discipline. We got to be disciplined.
So before it's fun. I want to do Anthony Powell on the show. I want to do Lord of the Rings. But before we even think, we got to do Once Future King, Life and Fate, Hawthorne. We got to wrap stuff up.
What's the Rebecca West book we always keep talking about?
Gray Leopard, Black Falcon.
Yes, something like that.
Red Falcon. Yeah, Black Lamb, Gray Lamb, Black Falcon. That one. But yeah, Life and Fate will finish. Anyway, the year of finishing.
If Sam Ernst is listening, he's going to hold us to that.
I talked with him. He just finished Stalingrad. So, this dovetail into another one of my. I want 2023 to be the year of guests. I want to have more guests.
Okay.
So speaking, when we do Life and Fate, we'll have to have Sam on to kind of give us some context with Stalingrad as well.
Okay. And he's also like smarter than us. So it's helpful.
Yeah, much smarter. If you've listened to the episode he's been on. So Sam, my other brother, Jeff, he's finished the Once the Future King, and he's smarter than me.
Okay.
Smarter
people on. I like this.
He's the smart one of the three of us. And so he's, I think especially for like the second and third, the later ones where it gets kind of deep and tricky, I don't even know if he wants to, but I'll make him come on. So my brother, Brad Kelly, another guy, he sent me his book House of Sleep, which is very good. I'm enjoying it a lot. He doesn't know this, but I'm probably going to bug him to come on. We have a surprise guest. I won't give the details because it hasn't been public, but we're going to read Sutri by Cormac McCarthy. Maybe have a fun, like a big surprise guest here in the spring-ish. Dale Jenkins, if we could pull that off. World War II.
Historian. Very historian, smart.
Like a big, Peter's nervous.
I am nervous. I'm nervous when we bring smart people on the podcast.
Oh, yeah. Bill Simmons. I'm going to see about I'll run the Pigo thing by him. Les Freeman. Sam Bakeman Fried, the guy I got in trouble.
Is he arrested?
Yeah, but I don't know, maybe he'll do a Zoom call from jail. Anyway, guests. I want to.
I like
bring
it.
More people on.
Should we have our wives on? I think so.
If we can convince them. I've tried to, like, I've called my wife over, like, hey, come in. She's like, no, she don't want to. But yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. I think it'd be really fun to do a mailbag episode. I've always wanted to do, like, mailbag. That's always fun. But I need you people to mail us something to do a mailbag episode. So, you know.
I like that.
So don't hesitate to send us an email. We're reading Life and Fate because of an email.
It's very true. Know.
Send us in some your questions, your concerns, your comments. Do you like my David Foster Wallace theories? We get enough of those, we'll do a mailbag episode, which is a lot less work than normal. So I really want to do that.
And our email address, for those wondering, is willbebooks@gmail.com. So there you go. Other goals I had were work through some of my TBR and Goodreads. I have almost 1,000 books on my to-read list. That seems like excessive.
I don't know if you can get to them all this year.
That I also said, I wrote something that said, sports, I like it, and I like reading books about it. Read more.
Yeah.
Just like an idiot. We read 2 sports books this year, and I'm like, oh, I love this kind of stuff. Right?
We'll do more.
Agree with it? No?
We'll do at least 2 sports books over on Patreon. It'll be fun.
They're really good books that we've chosen so far.
Paper Lion and 8 Men Out were pretty solid.
Very solid. 8 Men Out was borderline great.
They were both, yeah. Yeah, and I love Paper Lion. They were literary kind of fun books about from the 1960s.
There you go.
Sports. I got some good.
I don't have anything else as far as really. Those are sort of my goals for 2020.
Those were good and doable too. We didn't get carried away.
There weren't, I think the last time I was very specific about certain things, but I gave myself some leeway.
All right. I got a couple I can add. All right. This would be, I don't know if you'll go for it. It'd be more of a gimmick, but I think it'd give it a lot of traction. Okay. Cause you know how to gain an audience. You kind of like Skip Bayless does. You just pick a thing and roll with it and embrace controversy.
Canceled. Yeah, I got you.
Yeah. So if you wanted to, we could make 2023 the year of the problematic lit bro.
Okay.
We'd only read lit bro? Male.
No.
We'd only read lit bros. So we'd only read male authors who are sort of bad people. Well, or borderline. Like David Foster Wallace was bad. But people call him a lit bro.
Who's the guy who wrote American Psycho?
Grayson Ellis.
We'd read he's American a lit bro.
Psycho. We'd read some Franzen.
Okay. I actually like Franzen, the one book I read of his.
I this is all fake Twitter stuff, right?
People wouldn't like our podcast because we would just read these kind of dull.
We'd lean into it and we'd make a big deal about how we're only reading men and people be like, what? You can't.
How about this? How about we read everything Ben Lerner wrote?
Ben Lerner would be on there. We'd start calling him problematic for no reason.
Get sued.
Yeah. We'd read like Libra and White Noise. Cormac McCarthy. We're reading Cormac McCarthy anyway. We just lean into being problematic.
I forgot what Ben Lerner looks like.
Ben Affleck. He looks like
that. Kind of, yeah.
Yeah. Just to get it too gimmicky, but it's an option if we want to just drum up.
I think your brother mentioned this once. He wants us to read books we're probably not going to like.
Yeah.
That might be kind of fun.
Yeah. We could do that. We could pick a month and our nominations could be all
books who we don't really want to read.
We don't think we're going to like. And maybe we're surprised or maybe we could do that. We could pencil that in.
I think that should be a month.
We should pick a month. It's like,
called the begrudging month. Be like,
I like that. Begrudging March, February, March, or something.
The grudge.
I got my January stuff. So February, March, begrudging. That's good. I'm right.
Begrudging. Okay. Write that down.
That's better. We won't do the lit bro thing. We'll do begrudging.
Begrudging. There might be some lit bros on the nomination list. Definitely.
I think they might. There might be. Let's see. I am looking forward to adding some people. Like we're gonna do Flashman again next August. We'll be on the fourth one.
Yeah.
The Fourth Flashman. I'm looking forward to that.
I'm too.
I like having a recurring thing. I think we should maybe throw Woodhouse in there.
I agree.
Like a new Flashman, like maybe every summer-ish, we throw just a light, breezy PG Woodhouse.
I completely agree with that.
Also, Don Powell. We did Wicked Pavilion the year before, and I think we need to get to her in 2020. Let's
get back to Don Powell. Don Powell, fantastic.
Yeah. And we should finally do a Gore Vidal at some point.
I like it. These are all, I think, combined, these are fantastic goals.
And they're doable.
Let's effectively clip this and then play it back at the end of the year as we go. How much did we get this done as we just off into reading Hawthorne's forgotten novels? And
I mean, we will do some stuff like that. There's going to be some stuff that comes out of nowhere. But we'll make 2023 like a good list. Like having it written down, our last year's list was a solid list. And yeah, there was stuff we didn't get to. But it was really solid. I was proud.
I like it. So, this is good.
Yeah.
This is the Harrison Ford recap book episode.
Well, for me, for you, it'd be the Liam Hemsworth.
Chris Hemsworth. Is there a Liam? There might be a Liam.
They're brothers. There's a bunch of them.
What's the difference? The DNA.
They share DNA. Are they the same person?
Could be.
They're like in The Prestige.
Mm. Christopher Nolan. I don't know.
Okay, one more thing. And we kind of did this year, we did Scary Stories Tell in the Dark. And I think technically it was the year before, but The Beginning Place by Ursula Le Guin.
Yeah.
We've done some like kids YA stuff, but I think we should maybe
a little bit
of that in. A book called The Scorpio Races by Maggie Stiefhaver has been highly recommended to me by a friend of mine.
The Scorpio Races.
Scorpio Races. This YA. I got together with some friends that hung out and stuff growing up, and Randy is her name, and she kind of listens a little bit. She highly, highly recommended Scorpio Races.
And, I just added to my 1,000 TBR.
So I want to say, if people recommend this stuff a lot, I want to respect that and get to it. And it sounds pretty good. She also, we met at a little restaurant. And one of the first things she said was like, okay, do you have a picture of Peter? I was like, yeah. She's like, okay, don't show me. I want to describe what I think he looks like. And then I want to compare it.
So, I think we need to post our photos on Instagram. Is that what you're saying?
Okay. Maybe. And I forget the exact wording, but she basically described a monkey with a mullet.
Okay.
But then I showed her the... I showed her the picture of you
with the mustache. It's not insulting at all. I don't care. It's nice.
No, it's all right. No, and then I showed her the picture of you with the mustache.
It's not what I look like every day.
That you lost with the, you know? And she was like, oh, what a handsome young man.
Thank you. Thank you.
So,
you know what I envision? Okay. This is going to just get us so many likes on it. You and I go book shopping, and like our wives. They're going to be like annoyed with our bookshop, but they come with us and they take a picture of us together.
Sure.
With a bunch of books in our hand, be like, oh, look at these book guys, the book friends.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That'd be good. We could do stuff like that. We could do, put on YouTube, you know, there's like a video of famous actors going into the DVD store. And
oh, yeah. I like that. Should we just take ideas from cool podcasts and don't tell them?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Like the mailbag and stuff like that.
Mailbag episode. Email us some stuff.
Please email. Okay.
But I think neither of us look like what we sound like is kind of what I'm discovering.
I don't think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the listeners should know you're in a tracksuit phase of your life right now.
I'm what?
In a tracksuit.
Tracksuit. Yeah. 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 I've been wearing tracksuits a lot.
It's fun. It's fun.
Walking around, very comfortable. There's a reason people who don't have real jobs like wear them. You know,
they're comfortable. So, I might have to get a tracksuit. Maybe we should get matching tracksuits. Nah,
you should get. Well, you should get a tracksuit at least, and then like a we'll go to a bookstore, pick out our favorite indie books.
Hey.
But anyway, yeah. Randy, we'll get to Scorpio races this year. Hopefully, that's part of our.
It's on the list. It's on our 2023. I like it. Well, this has been, I think, productive, Matt.
Yeah.
Except for the first half hour where we almost derailed the whole podcast.
I think it's a good theory. I'm as proud of that opening as anything I've ever done.
It's very good. I mean, it's, there's a lot of, I mean, except for the fact that LL Cool J came up with it, I think you have something
there. After, 4 years after Infinite Jest was published,
he didn't come,
he came out with an album called
Prettiest Girl of All Time is not the same as GOAT.
It's G-O-A-T. It's acronym of all time. It's very close. And the fact that LL Cool J came out with something similar 4 years later does not negate my point at all. Real quick, I finished Heat 2. Did I tell you that?
Book.
Michael Mann, the book. Man and Meg Gardner wrote a half prequel, half sequel to the movie Heat as like a little thriller crime book.
And?
It's good.
It's good.
It's fun. It's fun. It was interesting. I listened to the audiobook. It was my old friend, the guy who narrated the Lincoln Lawyer books.
Oh, look at you.
I was pleased. He's a good, he kind of talks in a growl, you know, and at first I'm like, oh, is he gonna growl the whole time? But it actually works for the tone of the thing. Peter Giles, I think, isn't there? He's good. He does a very good Al Pacino. It is not an impression. He plays it very well because the character, Al Pacino's character, is in it. And so when that guy has dialogue, he drops into a very, I really wish I could do a good Al Pacino. But yeah, I was gonna try,
but then I thought I got nervous. People listen to this. I got nervous.
Here we go. He kind of talks.
I've been waiting on this, man. I can't do it.
I'm taking Jamie Foxx with me down to Albuquerque. That's from any given sense.
There you go.
I destroyed my
voice. Both got stage fright.
I couldn't pull the trigger on my
Al Pacino. I couldn't do it. I kind of did. It was bad.
Yeah. No. Peter Giles does a wonderful Al Pacino. He narrates the book very well. It's good. It's
about Peter Giles.
Really good bad guy. We follow up with the Val Kilmer character.
He too.
Who's still alive. You get some more context of Robert De Niro's character. You get a little before the movie Heat takes place. And it's if you like Heat, the movie, probably like Heat 2.
The book. Well, Matt, I want to go through the books we currently have on these are episodes we still have to record, right? And it's not a crazy number of books, right? But it's going to be a fun group of books. You agree?
Yeah.
So we have, first off, we have Drive Your Plow Over the Bones of the Dead. A book we have a couple months ago, which I'm excited to see you venture into the European literature scene and get your reaction to that.
Yeah.
Next up, we have a couple books. We have All the Seas of the World by Guy Gavalier K, a book I'm enjoying quite a bit. We have The Blithedale Romance by Nathaniel Hawthorne. I just started that book, got a little ways in. I'm actually kind of liking it more than I was expecting to.
Okay.
Say that. What else do we have here? We have Master and Margarita. Kind of forgot we added that as a seasonal book, but that's on our TBR, and we respect that. We have The Once and Future King, Life and Fate. We'll have a new spy novel that we'll be selecting over on our Patreon account. So if you're interested in that, we do kind of different books over there, the Patreon,
and we do voting too.
voting, so they kind of have a more of a voice in the nomination selection process there. So, and we have some cool coffee mugs that we have Matt has made up, and we'll be sending those to our patrons here shortly.
Patrons and new patrons will too. It comes with. Yeah. You don't have to do anything. We'll mail you one for signing up. So.
Yeah. I think I've covered all. That's all of our books, right?
And we're gonna plow through. We're picking a spy novel, maybe next episode, and then here before January's out, we're gonna add a January book. We're gonna keep plugging along.
We're doing it.
But 2023 is the year of finishing things. We're gonna
life and fate. We're doing it. Okay.
We life and fate, and maybe we could do once we hit. It's what, 1,200 pages. So once we hit page 400, so when it's still fresh, we could do an episode on, you know, we could do two or three episodes on life and fate.
I think that's reasonable. Yeah.
You know, yeah.
I mean, we after the Chiefs lose in the Super Bowl, you're going to turn off your TV and you be like, I'm a serious book guy. You did this last year. You'll do it this year.
Yeah. When we lose the Chargers in round two. That's what Sam, I talked to him during the Packers game. Mm. I told him, I was like, hey, Packers are going on a run. I can feel it. And then I texted him, I was like, oh, sorry. He's like, that's cool. No, he said, that's cool. I finished Stalingrad. I'm about to start Life and Fate. So you just, you know, your team loses and you just reach for the sad Russian literature.
I like it. Matt, any final thoughts on this, on our first episode of 2023?
Harrison Ford is one of the top movie stars of our lifetime, and I want to hear back from the public on the David Wallace office thing, which you're treating like a conspiracy, but I'll just reiterate, the character's name is David Wallace. Like, it's not controversial or anything. I think it's pretty clearly an homage, so... I know John Krasinski listens every now and then. So if, you know, mail us in and we'll do a mailbag episode. If you wrote for The Office or are John Krasinski, like, that was a little homage, right? It's too much to be a coincidence.
We'll talk to you soon.